What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the NFL Weekly Preview here. I am the Looch, and I'm joined by TJ. Wild week one, my man. It's not over yet. Obviously, we're recording on Monday here, but man, how was your week one experience? What were just your thoughts collectively? I know you're a Birds fan. We'll talk about that later. I don't want to hit on a sore spot right away, but a lot of action week one, TJ. Here we are.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was great to be back. You know, wake up Sunday morning and it's like Christmas morning. You're waking up, building lineups, sweating lineups all day, building primetime lineups. So it was really just great to have football back. A lot of red zone on my TV pretty much all day. And had a pretty good week one for myself personally, which is nice. Good to start the season in the green a little bit. Nothing too crazy, but nice little week one and just exciting to get back up and running. I think we've got a lot to learn from based on what we saw in these first games and take that with us to week two and beyond.
Yeah, green is green. Nice first week over there. And you know, we covered a lot of ground last week's podcast. There was just so much going on. But we did have some good calls, and I think we covered a lot of ground. And hopefully all of you get, leave us some feedback, you know, subscribe, give us a like, tell us what you're thinking. You know, have any questions, you know, feel free to DM either one of us on Twitter. We're both pretty active over there. But, yeah, I mean, just some late value opening up in week one, just in a quick review. And obviously there were some injuries coming out of week one, unfortunately. But I guess one of the elephants in the room is the Boston Scott Chalk, which did not work out. And, you know, he was carrying significant ownership on both sites. And he did get dinged up in, like, the third quarter, which didn't help anybody. But just for me, you know, we both watched the game, and you know the Eagles very well. That offensive line is a mess right now, and that didn't help anybody either.
Yeah, it is definitely a mess. It was really, really a tough scene to be an Eagles fan on Sunday. You know, we get off to the lead, and then it was just the whole second half was pretty much terrible. And yeah, from a fantasy perspective, I played both Boston Scott and DeSean Jackson in my main lineup on DraftKings. That was painful, double painful, essentially, for myself. But from a fantasy perspective, I think it also goes to show that even with Boston Scott in my lineup and in many other lineups, that you could still have a winning build just because that salary opens up so much value across the board. I mean, I think he was upwards of 50, 60% owned in a lot of contests. I personally played him in every single lineup that I made. I just thought the spot and the situation was too good. Obviously, it didn't work out that way, but that's how it goes sometimes. And then on the other side of the ball, the Gibson value also bombed, and I full faded that one. I never liked that situation much to begin with, and they were pretty much in a full committee there. I think I saw Gibson played like 18 snaps or something super low. So I thought that was kind of a bad chalk spot, and feel like the results played out that way as well.
Yeah, we could just kind of talk about some takeaways from that game, because there certainly were a few. I think Peyton Barber had 8 red zone carries, I think. And we know the guy isn't very good, but if he's going to be a brute in the red zone, I mean, he's punctable, right, in the right situation. Not my favorite thing. I'm not going there. But depending on what's on the slate, you know, obviously the red zone carries, we're not going to Gibson. That's for sure. That's for one thing in that game. Yeah, you know, Boston Scott obviously, you know, didn't really work out. But, you know, Wentz just didn't have a lot of time, you know. I think his A-dot was very high, but I think he was just letting the thing rip, right? I mean, he tried to move the ball downfield, and the timing just wasn't there. Chase Young, you know, as bad as the Eagles' offensive line was, Chase Young was a real eye-opener for me with how effectively he was kind of getting around the edge there.
No doubt. Yeah, Wentz did not have much time all day. That Washington punt defense play on DraftKings really came through. I think they scored 15 points. Probably they might have been one of the higher scoring defenses, certainly the best value at the minimum price, $2,000. Thought another takeaway for me from that game was Dallas Goedert. Yeah. Thought that he was very, very involved. And I would expect that we continue to see that from the Eagles. A lot of two tight end sets. Goddard played 80% of the snaps, 9 targets, 8 catches, had a touchdown. So big game for him, although I did see that his price got bumped up to $5,000 on DraftKings this week. So pricing looked pretty tight at my first glance. We'll obviously get more into that as we talk about some things. But, yeah, they were pretty quick to react on Goddard there. So not a ton of value to be had.
Yeah,
But
yeah, there might be some sticker shock there. I don't know what the exact numbers are off the top of my head. I have 12 million windows open here, and I don't, for time purposes, I don't feel like looking at it. But I think dating back to late last season, Goddard had like 7+ targets, I think, the last three or four games.
I did see a soundbite like that as well, yeah.
And kind of the whole thing with Ertz wanting to be an Eagle and the front office isn't really committing on extending him is kind of maybe the – I don't know. Maybe the torch is not being passed, but it seems like Goddard's going to stick around a while. Have you got a sense on like what Ertz's future is? And honestly, the guy's been battling so many injuries the last couple of years. Great. And we can't have better insurance than having Dallas Goedert right there. He's like an Ertz clone.
Yeah, they really do look the same out there. I had Ertz in my lineup on FanDuel, and sometimes you're watching the game and you see Goddard get a catch and you're like, oh yes. And you're like, oh wait, no, that's not Ertz. They look very similar out there. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think for now their plan is to roll with both of them. And like I said, run a lot of those two tight end sets. It seems to be working pretty well, two playmakers in that end. And Goddard's almost like a receiver a lot of the time. I mean, he's a big body out there making a lot of plays. So thought that he looked good. And I also thought that Logan Thomas on the other side was pretty involved. He had himself a touchdown, had 8 targets. And let's see, I had his snap numbers here for a second. Played 75% of the snaps. So yeah. I think that he's somebody that I heard a little bit of buzz around preseason and would look for his stock to continue to rise. He's at just 3,600 still this week on DraftKings. So he's maybe a punt option at tight end to take a look at next week and just going forward, keep him on your radar.
You see a lot of these super athletic tight ends where you can't even just kind of look at things and say, well, do they run 12 personnel a lot? And does it even matter? Because a lot of these tight ends get split out or they're in the slot now. I think he had over 20 snaps in the slot, I think, Logan Thomas did. So we're seeing guys like him. And I know Kosicki from Miami was another one who played in the slot quite a bit. So you almost just can't look at, well, do they run 11 personnel or 12 personnel anymore and just kind of make that inference, because you're seeing a lot of these tight ends line up out wide and line up in the slot. So guys like Logan Thomas who can really move around. For annual leagues, he's probably going to be the most popular waiver wire ad, maybe one of them going into next week. And, yeah, I agree, looking to him and the value there. Did they jump on his price at all on DK? Since we're talking about
Logan Thomas, he's still down at 3,600. Oh, so yeah. He'll be a nice value to potentially consider in week like two, that. I would say.
Like that. I mean, we could just kind of jump there and talk about some takeaways and pour it in here. In the twist here is like they're taking on the Cardinals. And I kind of like that game script for Logan Thomas as well. You know, Kyler Murray and the Cards like to get some snap, you know, a lot of snaps in. And we talked about DeAndre Hopkins a little bit before the show. And even in annual leagues, you know, you saw him dropping a little bit. And what's his target share going to be? And, well, what did you see on Sunday from Hopkins, TJ?
Well, we have 94% of snaps and 16 targets. So I would say that the target share is still there. And he had himself a very nice game. So, yeah, I think it was a pretty popular topic of discussion in the offseason. Was Hopkins only so good because in Houston he was seeing such an extreme amount of the targets from Deshaun Watson? Arizona likes to spread the ball around, yada, yada, yada. Now, granted, it's only a one-week sample, but – I think he had the second most targets of anyone on the slate. Yes, 16 targets for Hopkins, only behind Devontae Adams, who had 17. So I think that Hopkins is going to be someone that we're going to want to look to. And I thought Kyler looked pretty great as well in that sophomore season. So that's probably one of those stacks that's going to be viable almost any single week in GPPs just because of the upside and the condensed targets there to Hopkins. So definitely keep an eye on that situation, and maybe there's a little bit of a Murray Hopkins run it back with Logan Thomas stack in the books for week two.
Yeah, and Kenyon Drake, third most snaps among running backs on the slate, 58 snaps. So that's encouraging. You know, he's never been a bell cow or any sense of it. Even in high school and college, you know, you look back and read the articles, he was never the guy. You know, he was a timeshare in college. You know, then in Miami, he was either in the doghouse or injured or Adam Gase doing Adam Gase stuff when he was there, and he never had the opportunity to carry the load. But 58 snaps from Kenyon Drake is encouraging to me because I think he could do a little bit of everything there. Obviously, Chase Edmonds is like the darling handcuff, you know. He did see 28 snaps, though, too, so a little bit of involvement there, too. And he's like the ultimate handcuff in annual leagues, Chase Edmonds. He, you know, even when David Johnson was there, you know, people are like, oh, got to get Chase Edmonds. And we can talk about David Johnson a little bit later too. Looked pretty good on the opening night, you know, a little bit of his old razzle dazzle. But yeah, that Washington-Arizona game, you know, there's a couple of stackable games and we can get there later, but that's kind of sneaky. I kind of like some options on both sides of the ball there. Anything else in that game? You want to jump over to another takeaway that you saw from yesterday?
Agreed. No, I think I'm good on that game. Why don't we – maybe we should touch on some of the injuries that happened a bit, because I think the biggest one that is going to impact not just this week but the rest of the season is Marlon Mack and the Achilles injury in Indy and him being done for the season. And I think that's especially impactful because we saw Philip Rivers, new city, new team, continues to like those checkdowns to the running backs. And, he was throwing the ball to – Hines, he was throwing the ball to Taylor, he threw the ball to Mack when he was in there. So I think that Jonathan Taylor is definitely someone to keep an eye on. He could end up being a nice value play this week. He's at 5,800, I think, on DraftKings. And then I think Hines is at 5,300. So it'll be interesting to monitor that. And I think they were actually playing from behind against Jacksonville, which is kind of funny.
Right.
But so in a game script where maybe they're up more, I would lean towards Taylor over Hines, but it's potential that both of them are viable just with how many targets to the running backs are available from Rivers in that offense.
Yeah, Hines outsnapped Taylor by 13, but you're right, the game script was a little shaky there. But the big knock on Taylor was his lack of ability to catch the ball out of the backfield in camp and everything moving forward, which is kind of why reports were like Max kind of got the first dibs for now, and we'll see how quickly Taylor can kind of work on his game a little bit there. Obviously, the upside for him is monumental there. They're taking on Minnesota this week.
Minnesota.
Yeah, you got some household names on the Vikings side of the ball, but you can run on them from time to time, and I would think that game's going to be fairly competitive. I mean, we just saw what Green Bay did to Minnesota, so we can kind of piggyback. Talk about these couple teams here. Obviously, life after Stephon Diggs in Purple Nation over there. And Dalvin Cook, 2 scores. Didn't accumulate a ton of yards, but obviously those 2 scores, worked out pretty well for a lot of lineups. What are your thoughts on this Minnesota offense? And obviously, we could jump over to Green Bay then as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much Dalvin Cook and Adam Thielen from the Minnesota side, which – probably on a week-to-week basis are going to be really the only two guys that we look to target from that offense. Cook had himself a decent enough game, but I do think it's worth noting that Madison got a decent amount of snaps as well. It was pretty much a 60-40 split between the two. So while I still think Cook will have absolute upside any given week, the fact that he's not on the field 90% of snaps like some of these other higher priced running backs like a Zeke or a CMC, will probably be more of a tournament type of guy for me on a week-to-week basis versus a cash game. But like I said, the upside is always there. It's a team that likes to run the ball. And then, yeah, Thielen with the 2-touchdown performance, he was a pretty popular play as well. I unfortunately was not on him at all, but I think him and Ridley were two of the key wide receivers that you needed to unlock a big score last week on either site.
Yeah, for sure. And this Minnesota team is going to be run heavy, as most people expected here. Jefferson did see 36 snaps, you know, as a rookie coming in, out-snapped old BC Johnson by 3. And that was it, just stealing Jefferson and Johnson. The only other receiver to see a single snap was Tajae Sharpe. He only played 7. So, we kind of got a nice picture of what the Minnesota structure is. It's possible Jefferson's in some GPP winning lineups from time to time. But, yeah, Thielen had, 7 targets, caught 6 passes. The thing with Thielen is, he's by far the best route runner and guy out there for Minnesota. But, he's not blazing fast. So, he's not going to get shadowed a ton, right? He's just a guy that'll kind of move the chains. And, I mean, I'm not knocking Adam Thielen. He's quick, obviously. But – he's not going to warrant that Jalen Ramsey shadow and J.R. Alexander didn't shadow him really. So Thielen will have decent matchups from time to time. And yeah, Minnesota likes to run the ball, but how often are they going to be ahead? That's the question. They're not, they're a little bit – I didn't love what I saw from Cousins is what I'm getting at here. So yeah. What are your thoughts on Cousins? And then, you know, if you want to walk over to the Green Bay side of the ball, we can.
Yeah, I agree. It looked a little ugly. I mean, I feel like when I was watching Red Zone, every time I looked up, Green Bay had the ball and was driving, and we saw very little of Minnesota. It's almost like they got a lot of their work done on some of those bigger plays by Thielen. So it's not an offense that, at least right now, that I'm super thrilled about and looking to get involved in stacks or anything. But like I said, I think that Thielen and Dalvin as one-off kind of tournament plays will always be in there because they're going to bring that upside to the table pretty much regardless of the matchup. Obviously, Dalvin's somebody that you want to look to more so when they're in a situation where they're likely to be ahead and running the ball.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I was going to say on the flip side, you know, Devontae Adams, monster game, 70 snaps. Alan Lazard, 68 snaps. So maybe we're seeing this kid kind of filling out that number two role there because Valdes-Scantling played 25 less snaps than Lazard about. So, wow, monster game from Rodgers and company. Adams looked incredible. Target share is immaculate there. So obviously, you know, Adams moving forward is all signs are indicating toward this thing just continuing to trend upward, and obviously he's going to be the guy there. Aaron Jones, 42 snaps. Jamal Williams, 31. Tyler Irvin played 14. A.J. Dillon was on the field for 5. Jones did have a couple, like 5 or 6 carries inside the red zone. He had a touchdown called back. But, yeah, you know, we know – that looks like a pretty pure committee there between Jones and Williams. We saw other high-profile running backs get extensions this weekend except Aaron Jones and his contract's up. So I guess I'm a little shocked that they – more. For, in my opinion, he's by far the superior ball carrier there opposed to Jamal Williams. But we'll see. But talk to me. Devontae Adams, monster game. Aaron Rodgers looked good. And they're going to get Detroit this week, who is banged up in the secondary.
Yeah, I thought Adams was an absolute lock on DraftKings last week and had him in my main lineup. Obviously, very happy with that performance. He was just way too cheap at 7,300. He's come up a little bit in price. He's 8,100 now on DraftKings, which obviously makes it a little bit more difficult. But, you know, he's just going to continue to see such a massive target share. And I think he's one of the guys that's pretty much matchup proof in this league. So he's going to be in play every single week, whether it's for a cash game or for a tournament, going to come down to roster construction, but certainly love him again this week against Detroit. I don't think it's a matchup that gives me anything terrible pause there. Detroit on their side of the ball, obviously Galladay was out last week, not sure what his status is going to look like for week 2. Marvin Jones was someone that I looked to a little bit in some of my tournament lineups. He didn't really come through for me. And maybe in hindsight, he doesn't get as much of a bump as I thought he did with Galladay being out, just because he's kind of a touchdown-dependent guy anyways, as opposed to a volume guy, which is also why I tend to like him more for tournaments than for cash games. And then DeAndre Swift, the rookie in Detroit, got in the end zone, I believe, right?
He also dropped the potential game.
Oh, and he dropped that. So
heartbreaker.
So nothing really to write home too much about in his first game as a rookie, and Hockenson, I think, had a decent showing.
Yeah, well, 50 snaps for Hockenson. We'd hope to see that number climb a little more as the season moves on. But, yeah, you know, last year he was Jekyll and Hyde every week. Come on, Matt Patricia. People are starting to put Matt Patricia on the hot seat on social media and et cetera. You know, they ran the previous guy out of town, and Matt Patricia is like 10 games under 500 or something like that. And I just don't know. You have Kerryon, right? Guy still has upside. Maybe he's more hurt than we know. You have DeAndre Swift, and then you bring Peterson in, who has like 6 days of practice time, and he's on the field for 24 snaps. I'm scratching my head here. I don't know. That is such a mess back there. You know, we talked about Rivers. You know, can't teach an old dog new tricks. Same thing going on there. You know, he's checking down to the running backs. Matt Patricia's been trying to run the ball since he's got into Detroit. Just hasn't happened. Stafford threw the ball 42 times. Fantasy sports is all about opportunities. And moving forward, I know divisional game, they know each other pretty well, but you can find some pieces to probably have a nice little game stack here, a little two-teamer and a run back here with Green Bay and Detroit, especially with how dinged up Detroit secondary is. Okuda's still questionable. And the two guys back there that played, their status is in jeopardy for this week coming up too. So I don't know who's going to be in that secondary for Detroit, but if I'm looking at cash games or some single entries, you know, I'm licking my chops with Devontae Adams again here.
Yeah, no, definitely. Let's see. You want to talk about the I know that one of the games that we had talked about last week that we were high on for a sneaky game stack was the Panthers and the Raiders, and that certainly did not disappoint. 34-30 Raiders, and I think Josh Jacobs is really the guy to be talking about. Obviously, that is a pretty prime matchup for him, but played 80% of the snaps, even saw six targets. And
that's,
I think, the biggest question mark on him was his involvement in the passing game. Six targets. He had more targets than McCaffrey. McCaffrey only had five targets. So,
yeah.
Josh Jacobs, I thought that he was the best running back play value-wise last week. I went with him, CMC, and Boston Scott on FanDuel, went with Kamara instead of CMC on DK. But I think Jacobs is someone to continue to monitor, and I'm curious to see if they get into a game script where they're trailing, if he gets game planned out or if he remains in the game and starts to see that passing down work. But I think definitely any game that's close or where Oakland has a chance to be up, Jacobs is going to be that workhorse.
Yeah, no, I agree. We're not perfect, but I'm glad we spent some time last week to talk about the Jacobs and CMC. You know, you can play them both kind of thing. Got to be honest, I wasn't on Robbie Anderson and Teddy Bridgewater whipping out the arm a little bit, spreading things out. DJ Moore had 9 targets, Curtis Samuel 8, Robbie Anderson 7, and McCaffrey, he had 5. Yeah. And a big thing was, we talked about last week, was Kyle Allen was just not very good last year. There was a lot of discrepancy in air yards and actual yards left on the table, specifically with Curtis Samuel. Then you bring, you know, Robbie Anderson in, another Matt Rhule guy here, Temple guy. So you got a lot of burners out there for quarterback in Bridgewater, who's just been, you know, fairly conservative throughout his tenure in the NFL. And it's, I mean, maybe he just wasn't completely healthy or he was playing safe last year, but I felt like when I was watching the Saints games last year when he was in, that he was just checking down to Kamara every play. So I guess I was a little surprised that, you know, McCaffrey didn't have like 8 or 9 targets, as we're accustomed to seeing. But in terms of the value for those receivers, I mean, we have some serious GPP candidates now, just with the speed, you know, of all these guys out there. We saw Anderson, you know, wow, if you played Anderson in GP, a bit large field GPPs last week, you know, more power to you. That's awesome. So I agree with Jacobs. You know, if you're game log hunting and you're looking at last year, like, well, he didn't even have like any massive upside games. And I know in betting and gambling, people say trend is your friend, but you also have to take into consideration all the new circumstances. Like, this is a second-year player taking the leap. I don't care as much of what he did last year. Like, he didn't do anything last year to be like, damn, like, I'm not really on him. But we saw the game script, and he had a crazy good matchup against the Panthers. And, you know, we're talking about guys that who might be more valuable, and he's definitely up a couple pegs on my list now.
Yeah, absolutely. They have the Monday night game against New Orleans this week, so he won't be – on the main slate, but Carolina's going to Tampa. So I really feel like Carolina is going to be a team that is going to be in play for a game stack almost any week, because they're terrible on defense. They're going to give up a lot of points. And while it's maybe not like real football-wise a high-powered offense, I feel like there's enough guys on there that are potential high fantasy plays that it's going to make a game stack viable. Now, that said, on the other side of the ball with Tampa, man, Tom Brady, really tough first game as a Buck over there. I mean, that first drive, I was literally texting my friends like, oh man, Brady's out there throwing dimes, like his first throw right on the money, drawing pass interference plays, gets the patented Brady QB sneak for the touchdown. And then that was about all he did for the entire game. It was kind of wild to watch him throwing interceptions and looking a little bit lost out there. So maybe exactly what they need is getting Carolina at home 49-point over-under. Tampa's an 8.5-point favorite, which is a big favorite there. So yeah, maybe that's a spot to go back to a Brady Evans or a Brady Godwin type of stack. I think Godwin would certainly be my preference. I don't have the target. I don't know if you have the targets there, but I know Godwin seemed to be the preferred choice.
Yeah, I have snaps in front of me. I'll go over some snaps quick from that game. Godwin, 66. Evans, who had that questionable tag, 65 snaps. Gronk played 54. Scotty Miller saw 43. And here's O.J. Howard, 37 snaps. A guy who was kind of rumored in trade talks last year to go to New England. So I really wonder if Brady came to Arizona or to Tampa Bay and was like, Bruce, we're going to use O.J. Howard because I'm Tom Brady and I like throwing the tight ends. I don't know. But it was just nice to see O.J. Howard, who know that the talent's there, back on the field. And, yeah, I mean, this is going to be a big week. If Tampa Bay doesn't bounce back, you know where the national media attention is going to be, and it's going to be a circus with Brady and company down there. But, yeah, I mean, what? Team total-wise, they're projected to score like 28 and change, I guess, right now against Carolina. So, yeah, in terms of game script, I mean, you could totally run something back there with one of these Carolina guys, you know, whoever you favor the most.
Yeah, I think that'll be an interesting one to look at there and see if Brady can still get some points up on the board.
Yeah, for sure. Just another notable injury we'll get to, and we'll talk about kind of that last week's game and looking at week two, is Le'Veon Bell couldn't get through a game this year. He's going to be out, quote-unquote, a couple of weeks. We don't know how long. Ageless wonder Frank Gore is next up on the depth chart. So, you know, pretty ugly game against the Bills. Poor Jets fans. So we'll see. We'll see another unfavorable matchup for the Jets against the Niners. Coming up in week two, San Fran, 7-point favorites. Probably a game where I'm not going to take much action from. I mean, we saw, you know, Jay Crowder, Crowder and Herndon, who was great to see back on the field finally, pretty much owned that target share in Jets land. So, I mean, if I'm looking at anybody from that game, it's probably going to be one of those two, you know, depending on price. But that's a game where I don't plan on spending a ton of time researching on Jets and San Francisco.
Yeah, agreed. I think the Jets in general, they're almost going to be like the opposite of the Panthers, where whatever game they're in, you're probably not going to have a ton of interest from a fantasy standpoint. And as far as San Fran goes, I know Mostert had a pretty good game, but
yeah,
they're a much better real football team than fantasy football team, just because they have a ton of different weapons and can spread the ball around. Obviously, Kittle's always going to be the main guy on campus there, but always have interest in him. Other than that, it's mostly more of flyer type plays, and Mostert is always going to be in play for tournaments, but I don't see him ever emerging as like the top value on any given slate.
Scary moment with Kittle, allegedly yeah, avoided serious injury. Apparently he's good to go, according to some reports I see. Yeah, we'll have to monitor that moving closer to Sunday as well. But another thing, you know, we just talked about, you know, where's Alan Lem when I need a good revenge game narrative? But we just talked about a little bit of Frank Gore revenge game. And hear me out. Did you say Teddy Bridgewater revenge game? Is that Monday night special there for primetime? I'm kind of kidding, but it's just kind of funny. And you never know. But, yeah, two guys going against their former teams we just talked about. Yeah, but there are a couple of games, you know, that – we're not really trying to go game by game, but there's a couple we're going to highlight here because they're going to carry ownership and they seem to be stack friendly, right? So, you know, obviously, where do we want to go here?
Let's do Atlanta-Dallas. I think that's the best one.
And if you want to lead into just, I think it was our first stack game we talked about last week was Atlanta-Seattle. Lots of points there. So, you know, what are your takeaways from Atlanta-Seattle? And then, you know, feel free to head into the week two matchup.
Yeah, so all offseason there was this narrative of, are the Seahawks going to let Russ cook? And they threw the ball 35 times, 31 for 35. So he had as many touchdowns as incompletions. So really, I think seeing a lot of upside there from Russell Wilson. He spread the ball around pretty nicely. I think Lockett had the most targets there. Let's see. Yeah, Lockett with 10 targets. Metcalf with 8, Chris Carson with six. So good job of spreading the ball around. And yeah, again, talked about that game as a potential stack, and a lot of value came to fruition there. Calvin Ridley with a big game on the other side with the Falcons. Julio with a typical Julio game where he gets over 100 yards but doesn't get into the end zone, which seems to be pretty typical for him. So those two teams, also similar to Carolina except much better football teams, going to be eligible in game stacks, I think, almost in any matchup. And that leads us into this week where we've got Dallas and Atlanta. So last year, there was always a thought of playing running backs against Atlanta, right? And so now we've got Zeke Elliott against the Falcons. So I really, really like him in that matchup. I could see him being one of the top plays to force into your lineups this week. 8,200 on DraftKings, 8,600 on FanDuel. For those of us that watched the Monday night game last night, I think Zeke looked pretty good, as always. I think he had like 96 yards, just missed getting the 100-yard bonus, was involved in the passing game, played, 90-some percent of the snaps. So I think Zeke is going to be a go-to guy in all formats and a building block for my line. Again, it's Monday. Things could change, but he definitely jumped out on the page as in that game in general. Amari Cooper, 15 targets last night. It seemed like every time I looked up, he was getting the ball, which wasn't great because I had CeeDee Lamb in my lineup, and I was hoping for him to get more targets. And then injury news on the Dallas side, Blake Jarwin out for the season. So it's not the biggest fantasy impact injury-wise. Schultz obviously will come into that role. It leaves a little bit more targets for the rest of the receiving core, but Jarwin was never a mega fantasy piece. So I don't see that being like the biggest impact.
Yeah, and just to jump back on that Seattle game momentarily here, Chris Carson, 28 snaps. Carlos Hyde, 21 snaps. Travis Homer saw 13. Hyde carried the ball seven times. Carson, six. What are your thoughts? Got any just thoughts on that run game? Chris Carson, the guy who's not typically a noteworthy pass catcher, I guess, but – man, Russell Wilson and just his efficiency, 31 of 35, that it's just got to be maddening as a defense. And he's one of the most efficient quarterbacks of our time, right? I mean, the last 20 years, he doesn't make mistakes. But it's almost like in years past, I mean, they were just super cautious with him, you know, game plans. I mean, when you have Marshawn Lynch for five or six seasons, I guess you can just pound the ball and go over the top, but – tell you what, Wilson's trending upwards, and it was nice to see Metcalf get in the end zone there, and they look good, man. That's going to be a scary team. But you got any thoughts on those running backs there? You think that situation will be more of a split, or are we going to see Carson kind of carry more of the load?
Yeah, that's a really good point, and maybe Carson is on the list of someone who maybe we shouldn't be as high on as we were going into the season if, A, they're going to – allow Russ to throw more, and so maybe there's not as many carries to go around for Carson, and B, he's going to be splitting time with some of these other guys. I'd be a little bit cautious on Chris Carson. Now, obviously, the benefit and the upside was getting six catches and seeing six targets in the passing game, which is not typical for him. But again, I think that probably also may speak to this Atlanta matchup where, for whatever reason, it's just super friendly for passing. Pass-catching running backs, even if they're not typically that mold of running back, someone like Chris Carson getting six catches, I would expect nothing less from someone like Zeke Elliott playing against them next week. So, yeah, really bullish on Seattle just overall as a team, that offense,
yeah.
Another team that you're going to want to look at every single week regardless of the matchup that they have the Sunday night game against New England this week.
It's going to be a good one. And you know what, the Travis Homer thing is strange to me. I mean, maybe they're just going to let Russ rip because the game script-wise, you know, a year or 2 years ago, Homer wouldn't have been in the game, right? Because they were ahead. They were pretty much ahead quite a bit, right? So
yeah,
that's interesting to me. I'm going to monitor that. I'm kind of glad they're not a main slate, so maybe we can take a little wait-and-see approach heading into week three with Seattle there. But, yeah, moving in just on some week two thoughts here. Atlanta and Dallas, like you said, Zeke, you know, love Zeke, definitely for sure. What are your thoughts on Todd Gurley on the ATL side of the ball? What, you know, what did you see from, you know, his usage and things like that?
Yeah, good question. So Gurley, or Atlanta in general, was on my list as one of these backfields that seems to have a pretty even timeshare. So I've got Gurley at 46% of the snaps, Hill at 27%, and Ito Smith at 25%. So obviously don't love that from a workload perspective, but Gurley was pretty efficient with his touches. And I believe he got into the end zone as well. I may be wrong about that, actually. But I think that he'll be a tournament-only type of play just from the workload perspective. I got a couple backfields here, and it's not necessarily comprehensive, but we talked about some of them. We've got Atlanta, Green Bay, Seattle, Washington, really split backfields there. And then in Buffalo, seemed like they were pretty split between Singletary and Moss, where Moss was getting the work on the goal line. And then same thing in Cleveland, Chubb and Hunt split their snaps 50-50. Now, granted, they were getting absolutely crushed by the Ravens, so Hunt is in there for passing down purposes. But I'm just trying to keep an eye on some of the backfields where it seems to be very spread out, because in general, I think getting the running back position right is super important for daily fantasy. And so I want to make sure that I'm targeting backfields where I know my guys are going to be on the field and in the field in good situations, getting those high value opportunities to score some fantasy points. So a little bit of an aside there, but I did have that note and wanted to make sure we touched on it.
A guy to monitor and is trending upwards. I'm not saying I'm playing him next week. You know, maybe large field GPPs when you're playing a bunch of entries, but maybe towards the end of the season, he carves in a bigger role. Or if you're an annual league and you want like a bye week filler, is Russell Gage, 9 targets on Sunday. Looking back at last year, week 15 and 16, he had 6 targets each. Then week 17, he had 13. This is a guy who really didn't play he didn't play like 35% of the season early on, like any significant action. He still had 74 targets there in Atlanta. So, you know, depending on game script and what you're thinking, obviously Ridley had a monster game there, kind of big second half there. And he correlated well with a lot of Seattle game stacks and what everybody did. So, but Russell Gage, sneaky, he's cheap. We'll see what happens moving forward there in Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned him. I actually had him on my list as well. Just missed that. He was someone that I started drafting a bit in best ball towards late in the summer too. So someone to keep an eye on. And I think this week is another good spot in that high scoring environment at Dallas.
Yeah, it was really nice seeing everyone back on the field. You know, week one was finally here. A lot of football left. A lot of different options to play on DFS sites, main slates, showdown, prime time. But to add to that excitement, if DraftKings has millions of dollars up for grabs and total prizes, if you haven't tried DraftKings yet, get on over to the App Store, because you don't want to miss out this year. So much hype, so much fun, good water cooler talk at work. Hey, how'd your lineup do, you know? Or if you're working remotely, I guess you could drink a water and go on Zoom and talk to your coworkers and see how they did. So lots of options out there in DraftKings. Get on over there and use promo code GRIND. That's GRIND. For a limited time, new users can get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes this upcoming week. You don't want to miss out on week 2. Enter promo code GRIND, GRIND, over there on DraftKings. Minimum deposit of $5 is required. And hey, you don't want to miss out on a shot to be a Millie winner. Moving on here, a couple games left I know we might want to highlight and some guys. I know there's one takeaway I want to get to before we maybe talk about another nice week 2 game is Austin Eckler. Are you throwing the red flag? I mean, you saw one target. Was it a fluke game? New quarterback in Tyrod Taylor. We talked about Phillip Rivers, who is Mr. Checkdown himself. He's gone. So are you panicking on Eckler? Or is this a spot to maybe go back to him, or people might be a little bit scared to do so?
Yeah, it's not looking great for the Eckler folks. He played 68% of snaps, which isn't necessarily horrible, but I think the most concerning thing is that he only saw one target. And that was one of the things that was most valuable with him last year, was that he was getting a lot of catches. He was a great PPR play. Of course, we already talked about Philip Rivers earlier, and it seems like maybe that was more of a Rivers thing than an Eckler thing. And he goes into a complete opposite situation with Tyrod Taylor at quarterback. And I think the other bit of pause around Eckler is Josh Kelly, who seemed to be getting involved, and particularly Josh Kelly saw 6 red zone carries versus Eckler's 3 red zone carries. So that's something to be aware of if Kelly's going to be kind of the red zone goal line type of back. It doesn't seem like it's necessarily exclusively in that direction, but I'd be a little hesitant on Eckler right now, and I'm probably going to take a wait and see approach. And they do have Kansas City, so it is a nice matchup in a game environment standpoint. Yes. So maybe you do go back to him, actually.
Yeah, that I was
just say. Because of that. Yeah, I hadn't looked at the matchup yet,
which makes our decision even tougher, right? I mean, you got the ideal game flow situation to catch passes.
Yeah, if he's not catching passes against Kansas City, then we really need to raise the red flag. So yeah, I'd give him another shot this week, and see what that goes. Yeah, 49-point total, Kansas City. They're 8.5-point underdogs. Mm-hmm. Would definitely expect them to have to be throwing the ball. It also, I think I noticed that they had a pretty condensed target share between Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, and Hunter Henry, right? Yeah. Williams, 10 targets. Keenan Allen and Hunter Henry, both with 9 targets. So while it maybe isn't the most high-powered offense in general, it at least makes it pretty easy from a stackability standpoint of picking one of those guys and pairing them with Tyrod, or maybe even more so just using one as a run back to a Mahomes stack this week in particular.
Right. But if things go back to the way they were, you'd figure some of those numbers from one of those three guys will go down and go towards Eckler a little. So a lot of things to think about with this game. And I think that make a lot of unknown. And when there's unknown, I'm prone to kind of take a shot in GPPs, right? So especially this earlier in the year, if it burns me, it burns me. But I like the game script. We know what Eckler's got. The coaches were raving about him all offseason. We'll see. I mean, this will be another telling week. We said it would be a big telling week for Tampa Bay. It'll also be a telling week for a guy like Austin Eckler to see where he's going to fit into this new Tyrod Taylor style of offense. And then we might have another discussion in 4 weeks if Justin Herbert takes over, right? So we'll see. But for now, we got to figure out what's up with Tyrod Taylor and Austin Eckler.
Yeah, and it's $6,500 on DraftKings for Eckler. Yeah. Not a bad price. He will definitely garner some of my attention.
Yeah, I mean, per dollar, he's one of my favorite plays per dollar on DK. You know, I mean, Mostert had a really nice game. He's right there at 64. You know, he had one huge play that kind of helped him out. Wow, should be interesting. I'm curious to see what his projected ownership is going to be. Check out all of our Roto Grinders tools. Our premium content is second to none. You know, I'm looking at Lineup HQ right now. We already have our projections loaded in. Projected ownerships will come later in the week. But there's so many tools, from podcasts to expert surveys to premium articles to snap counts to whatever you need. Like, we got everything under one roof, one umbrella here. And we're going to help everyone out throughout the year. TJ, we got like 8 or 9 minutes left. Any other big takeaways? I know there's like 1 or 2 other games we want to talk about in terms of potential shootouts and scoring.
Yeah, I think we touched on the majority of my big takeaways. We didn't mention Lamar Jackson at all yet. He had, you know, a good fantasy game, but also at the same time, with his price tag, didn't quite pay it off. But that said, there were 2 times where they're in the red zone and they ran the ball in, which is kind of rare. They also, I mean, I don't know why the heck they did this, but they decided to hand it to a fullback on, like, I forget if it was 3rd or 4th and 1, and then he fumbles. So it could have been a much, much bigger game for Lamar. So he, for me, it's going to be any week where value emerges, like, Lamar is going to become a priority, I think. And especially with McCaffrey, we'll continue to look at McCaffrey, but if he's not going to be getting the 8 to 10 targets like he was last year, like, I think Lamar may become the premium pay up option just in general. So I love Lamar. I think he's always going to be in play. I played a lot of Lamar lineups last week, And yeah. they're playing against Houston next week. So it should be a little bit of a shootout type of game if Houston can keep up.
Another backfield to completely avoid right now is Baltimore Ravens. I mean, counts. Dobbin 23. Patrick Ricard 23. Is that the fullback we're talking about? I don't even know. Mark Ingram 21. Gus Edwards 15. So you have the three-headed monster doing exactly three-headed monster things. But let me ask you this without looking. I don't know if you're looking. Who led the receivers in snaps last week?
Well, I guess it's not Marquise Brown.
You got me.
Is it Marquise?
No, you were onto my little trick there. It was only a difference of
who was it?
Miles Boykin played 40.
Boykin, okay.
I mean, this is a guy every year who's like, oh, he's got the raw talent. What's he going to do? And he does nothing, right? But, I mean, Boykin played 40. Snead played 39. Willie Snead, God, the guy's old as dirt. He just finds a role somewhere in a productive team. But seriously, though, it was only a three-snap differential. Just thought it was interesting to know.
Yeah.
But I've seen a little bit of evolution from Brown's game, man. He's not just a one-trick pony, run right down the field kind of guy. We saw a lot of plays where he aggressively came back to the football, and that could be huge for them.
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, I think Andrews had himself a two-touchdown game as well. Yep. Shout out to me. Wrote him my GPP article. Said that he had multiple touchdown upsides. So at least I got one thing right there. But, yeah, for me on the Baltimore side, it's going to be Lamar and, you know, either pair him with Marquise Brown or pair him with Andrews. And not a ton of long-term interest outside of that. And then on the other side of the ball in this game, I think Will Fuller looked pretty great on Thursday night.
Yes.
Playing 80% of the snaps, 10 targets against Kansas City. So they were looking his way a lot in the absence of DeAndre Hopkins. So, and his price didn't come up too much. I think I saw he's like 6,300 on DraftKings. Yeah, 6,300 on DraftKings. So he's someone that Baltimore is not really a defense that you want to target, but it's a game environment that you want to target because their offense is so strong. So Fuller's going to have my attention as long as he can stay healthy. And I think you briefly mentioned David Johnson. I thought that he looked pretty good as well. So those are really the three guys. And I think Duke Johnson may be dealing with some sort of injury. So
yep.
If Duke Johnson is out, that'll probably be even another notch towards David Johnson for this week. And I know we're running low on time here. Just two other things. We're recording this on Monday night, so we have not yet seen the Monday night football games. But Tennessee is going to be home against Jacksonville and is a 10-point favorite. So I think we're going to want to take a look at Derrick Henry, the big dog, anytime they're a big home favorite like that. Obviously, Henry doesn't set up the best for DraftKings because he doesn't really catch that many balls. But, I mean, he could go for literally 200 yards and 3 touchdowns. So you're going to want to take a look at Derrick Henry this week. And then I think the other game, Pittsburgh, they'll be hosting Denver next week. I think James Conner at 6,800 is potentially going to be somebody that we want to look at. We'll have to see what his workload looks like tonight, but I think he's going to be one of those guys that is at least projecting to have that workhorse type of role. So just wanted to make sure to shout out those two guys, although we have not seen them tonight, and it'll be interesting to see how they do. Maybe hopefully they don't do that well, and then people won't want to play them, and we can let the recency bias drive down the ownership.
You took the words out of my mouth, and Henry just eats the Jags alive. I'm just looking at FanDuel, where he's probably preferred, you know, play on FanDuel.
Yep.
He's right there at 8,300 with Zeke at 86. So you got the
– oh, wow. Yeah, that's going to be an interesting decision. I mean, I wasn't kidding. Henry could literally just, like, run all over the Jags. And
yep.
Tennessee would have no problem just giving him the ball over and over and over. So.
And then it's, hello, DJ Chark game script incoming,
yes,
right?
There we go. There
who,
we go.
Who – if he didn't score – he scored, it kind of bailed him out, but – you know, he it is what it is. You know, Minshew and him have a good rapport, and I'll go back to that. They're going to be trailing all year, right? They won. Okay, what am I? I'm not taking anything away from the Jags, but according to Vegas, 10.5-point dogs. You know, you're going to want to look at some chasing there with the receivers for sure. Anything else? Any other kind of guys per dollar? Any? You know, I was just doing some scrolling through here. you know, it was Monday. That was kind of some of my first look too. So, and sometimes the first look is like the best, because like, you know what the information is off the top of your head, and what you kind of like in the beginning of the week. Did you ever make a bunch of changes? And you're like, wow, like my first look, my gut, like I got off it. But I mean, per dollar, I saw T.Y. Hilton's like 57 on DK. And when we just saw the horrendous performance of that Minnesota secondary against Davante Adams, and Hilton still had 9 targets, you know, it's not like he wasn't involved. It was just one of those games. So he's just one guy we didn't mention that kind of stuck out to me at wide receiver. Anybody else per dollar that you saw that's kind of intriguing before we wrap it up here? I mean, there's a pricing's tight, but there's, you know, I said we mentioned Kenyon Drake earlier, 59 on DK. I think that's a good spot if he's really going to play almost every snap too. That's a GPP. That's a sneaky GPP game right there. I know we mentioned in the beginning of the show, but that, you know, the more I'm thinking about that Washington game, whew.
Yeah, if Drake at 5,900, because I'm curious to see if Jonathan Taylor 5,700 is going to be the chalk. I imagine that's going to happen because people are going to talk about it. And then, like, I think that it'll be Taylor over Hines, even though Hines had the big week last week. So, I mean, Taylor definitely stuck out to me as a nice value. I mentioned Fuller. He really did stick out. I really do feel like they price things tightly. I mean, Marquise Brown was 5,100 last week. Now he's 6,200.
Yeah.
Russell Gage, 4,800. Like, you mentioned him. I was looking at him. I was like, oh, he's going to be a great, like, 4K play. And he's 4,800.
48? So that's tough.
It starts to get expensive. So I think we're really going to be hurting for value here. We'll have to continue to monitor the Miles Sanders injury situation, even though Boston Scott is now up at 5K. So it's going to be tight this week, and that's going to make it fun.
Agreed.
See what shakes out. And then, you know, it's always possible that some value emerges from the Monday night games here.
I feel like Amari Cooper is like maybe just like slightly underpriced.
Oh, yeah, 6,300, yeah. That's a good one, too. I like that.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be very popular in that game, a lot of points. But, yeah, that's about it. TJ, where can the people find you on Twitter, and what's your content schedule like this week? What do you got going on?
Yep, so you can find me on Twitter at TJL5124DFS. Content-wise for NFL, be coming out with my DraftKings GPP article. It'll be coming out on Fridays. So just go through 5 or 6 of my favorite plays specifically for larger field tournaments. So trying to find some pivots off of the chalk for things like the Millie Maker, things like, you know, if you're building 150 max, what are some of the plays that you should be putting into your mix? And that'll be my main thing there. Other than that, got golf content continuing to go on. Doesn't feel like it, but we do have a major coming up this weekend. I'm currently very upset with DraftKings for their weak contest that they've put out. Very, very small contest for a major. But I guess I understand because football's out there. But, yeah, I'll be in those streets as well.
Cool. Definitely check TJ out. A lot of stuff going on this week. I'll be on the Thursday showdown stream with Tambo before lock. So we'll get you some of that info too. Should be a fun week. TJ, it's a pleasure as always. Appreciate you coming on, and good luck coming up. And to all of you, give us a like, give us some feedback, subscribe. Got any questions, feel free to hit us up, drop a comment on RG, or feel free to reach out on Twitter. So for TJ Lasig, I'm Justin Carlucci. Have a great week and good luck.